Let me start by thanking Bob and Jennifer and the Eco America team for the great work they do in advancing all of our awareness and communication skills on climate and health. I'm going to segue from that really nice presentation on children's health impacts to talking about the first of the three non-health sectors that during this session will relate to climate and health. I'm going to talk about the higher education sector, which happens to be the sector that I work in. I'm at the University of Washington. Our university is relatively engaged with this issue, and I think I'll use us as a case study to show you some of the things that we do and be a little bit evaluative. First question is, why even think about higher education as one of the other sectors to consider in a session like this? Well, a number of reasons make it very important. This is where tomorrow's leaders are being trained. So the people who in 20, 30, 40 years are going to be doing the innovation, making the decisions, implementing policies are the people who are coming through universities today. What happens there matters a lot in forming their thinking. Universities tend to be hotbeds of innovation, where practices and technologies are developed and can be tried out. They're very good laboratories to work in. They're relatively defined and boundaried. They are relatively small and workable. They have governance structures that range up to the dictatorial, which means that things can actually be implemented pretty quickly. Not that that's advisable. We tend to be very participatory and inclusive in our decision making, but that too is a model of implementing climate-related policy changes. And finally, a lot of people outside the university sector care about universities. State legislators who are graduates of their state universities, donors who are graduates of the finest private universities. And because those stakeholders care about what happens in universities, progressive action within universities can influence the thinking of those stakeholders. So this is a good sector to look at. Before I proceed to the next slide, I want to point out that I can see from here a lot of empty chairs up here, and I can see some people standing in the back. So please feel free to come up and make yourself comfortable if you want to. This session is going to go on for a little while. So when we talk about action on climate and health in universities, a few strategic questions arise. The first is, how do we frame it? Do we tackle this as a climate issue? Well, that would be fine, and it's often done. The concept that's taken hold in a lot of universities is sustainability, and that, of course, includes action on climate change, but extends more broadly, and in some cases, depending on the university setting, may be a less controversial concept. The general notion of environmental sciences, environmental studies, ecology, ecological thinking may be a very suitable academic framework as well. So we can advance our thinking and practice on climate change at the university level through a number of frames, and I think there's probably no single right answer. Each university has to decide for itself. One of the claims that I'll make is that understanding these issues, understanding the kinds of systems thinking and analysis, the kinds of cross-cutting solutions, transcending disciplines, all of these things are basic skills for 21st century citizenship. In the same way that we used to think that civics was a normal part of everybody's education a generation ago, sadly that has fallen by the wayside. Environmental and ecological thinking, systems thinking, and awareness of climate change really has to be requisite for informed citizens in the coming century, given the magnitude of this challenge. So this is a framework for introducing this material into the life of a university. A very important strategic consideration at universities is that the best initiatives are those that are driven by students. And I'll make the case that at our university, that's how our climate program began, and a lot of the energy still comes from students. So this should not be a top-down. It needs top-down support, it needs leadership support, but very much the energy needs to come from the bottom up, and that's a good metaphor for community-level action on climate change in general. And finally, universities more and more are taking on new approaches to pedagogy as they need to, given the complexity of knowledge and the complexity of problems that society has to confront. This arena, the climate, or more broadly, the sustainability arena, beautifully exemplifies those challenges and presents a pedagogical platform for doing what universities mostly want to do anyway. The notion of problem-based learning, rather than forcing people passively to sit by while we inflict lectures on them, as I'm doing to you right now. The transdisciplinarity, the fact of community engagement. Universities increasingly want to reach outside their walls and engage with their communities. This is a perfect vehicle for doing that, too. So you can actually, in one of the standard approaches to partnership, where you sit with your potential partner and say, how can I help you be successful? Climate advocates within universities can say to university leadership, how can I help you be successful at these broad institutional goals? And the climate material tends to be very helpful in that regard. So as a framework for how universities might proceed, I'm going to present the three C's of diversity. There's actually four here, and I'll explain that in just a second. But the standard approach for addressing and promoting diversity in universities is the first three C's that you see there. Climate, in this case, a very different meaning of the word climate. What is the climate on campus? Is it a climate that that broadcasts inclusiveness, diversity, tolerance, or is it a climate that is discouraging or exclusionary to some people? So a university that's advancing diversity establishes a climate on campus that speaks that commitment. Secondly, there's the curriculum piece. Is diversity woven into the curriculum? Third, there's counts. What does your population look like? Do you have a diverse faculty, students, and staff or not? That's an outcome that can be measured. I like to add to that a fourth, which is really the pipeline, but pipeline doesn't begin with a C, so I call it conduits. Do you have arrangements in place to recruit diverse faculty and students from underrepresented backgrounds, bring them into the university, and assure their success? So this, I offer you this by way of analogy, because this paradigm for advancing diversity on campuses is very applicable, I think, to advancing climate engagement on campuses. There is the question of climate. Is it cool and pervasive and normative for people to be environmentally aware, to reduce their carbon footprints, and so on? The curriculum piece, I'll get back to that. Research. A big product of a lot of universities, especially the large R ones like the one where I work, is the research. So is research on various aspects of climate, in our case climate and health, advanced and supported at the university? Universities are big plants with big operations, and they in fact have the chance to reduce their carbon footprints and to become more energy efficient, so that needs to be part of our thinking. And then finally, universities produce students, students go on to careers, so in what ways, once we integrate climate awareness into the university's operations, do we see to it that students who are engaged can find a job doing this work once they leave the campus? Otherwise, a lot of the promise and commitment that they'll make won't be kept. So at our university, I'm going to use this as a case study. There was a presidential executive order some years ago that called on the university to become more sustainable. We formed an environmental stewardship committee, which is a faculty, staff, student committee. We have a university climate action plan, and if your university doesn't yet have one of those, I'd recommend developing one. And we have an office at the university level that it says supported by, and this is very important, this isn't the office that manages and runs our sustainability efforts. It's the office that sort of herds all the cats and keeps track of who's doing what and encourages. But it's really, this is very much the quality of a grassroots, ground-up effort. On the climate, there is a lot going on our campus that makes it clear to anybody who keeps his or her eyes open that climate matters and sustainability matters. We have a lot of parties, celebrations, T-shirts. There's a farm. We have farm parties. There are energy retrofits of buildings. Those become parties. So keeping it fun. We have a campus sustainability fund that the students decided to impose on themselves. So a part of the student fees every year goes to a fund, and that fund is available for student sustainability projects. So it very much engages the student body. They have some skin in the game. A lot of engagement efforts, social media, blog sites. There is a mascot who helps promote the university's sustainability image. We have videos. Bob, you'll be interested to know that's called Climate of Change. That's our video page, and students who love videos these days can go there and look at those, and sometimes they're pushed out as a part of programming. And we look at ratings. Now, for those of you who haven't been in a university for a while, what happens is groups like U.S. News and World Report come out every year and they rate universities. And the methods that they use are opaque and probably invalid. As a result of that, if you get a high rating, you brag about it. And if you get a low rating, you criticize the methodology. But universities do compare themselves to each other a lot. So here are some of the university rating scales for sustainability. And what we do at our campus is constantly compare ourselves with others and then broadcast the results. So the Pac-12 is the athletic league to which we compare ourselves. And you can see that on the STARS rating, on the Princeton Honor Roll, on the Sierra Cool Schools, on the Stockholm Environment Institute report card, we do very well. And we toot about that, and in turn, getting those sorts of recognitions helps reinforce among university leadership, president and provost, board of regents, that this is part of our brand, and it helps it, it creates a virtuous cycle. Same thing with the Global Peer Challenge schools. In the academic piece, the pedagogy that I talked about that pertains to sustainability and climate is shown here a little bit. Some of the themes to the pedagogy, the need for collective action, a conviction that has been steadily weakening in our country since the Reagan era, but that is intrinsic to tackling the climate problem. It can't just be behavior change. It's got to be collective policy and institutional change. The notion of probabilistic thinking, which is very much part of climate science that very few people understand, needs to be part of what we teach. Systems thinking, as I've mentioned, the whole notion, which is intrinsic to public health, of evidence-based policymaking, the basic science of climate, and of course the economic aspects. These are skills that students need to know when they finish their higher education, so these need to be woven into the teaching that we do on climate. Well, fortunately, there is a lot of great material available for all of that. Just on the climate and health piece, there are several new books just out, there are online curricula, there are MOOCs that are developing. Is Jonathan Patz here? He would want me to advertise his MOOC, and there it is. So there, it's not hard if you want to develop this academic content on your university to find the materials that you need. I'm not going to talk about our portfolio of teaching or our portfolio of research at our campus. The one thing I'll say is that we have on the sustainability website this panel. Each of those is a clickable button. And behind that, we've inventoried all of the coursework across the university that's relevant to sustainability and all of the research that's relevant to sustainability. So it's a very nice access point for students or faculty colleagues who want to find others doing this work and connect with it. We have a governance structure at our university that's pictured here. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through this, but suffice it to say that there are many, many stakeholders at any big institution who need to be part of a successful effort at sustainability. So they need to be connected in a relatively transparent and visible ways, even if the diagram ends up looking intimidating like this one. We've done a lot of analysis at our university, and I want to show you this. I'm getting into the operations side of things now. This is a marginal abatement cost curve. So from left to right, you're seeing a listing of the potential climate abatement steps that we could take as a university. The bar shows the cost per unit of CO2 emission reduction for each of those interventions. So at the left end, the bars go downward. Those are negative costs. Those are interventions that will pay us back if we make them. All the way to the right, you have some interventions that are quite costly to bring about. The thickness of the bar indicates how much carbon dioxide equivalent reduction we could achieve by each intervention. So this was a 3-4 year analysis. Both consultants and students worked on it, and this really guides our policy making as to where we're putting our money and making our interventions. It's a really nice conceptual scheme, very transparent to everybody. We track everything we do, and this is I can't overstate the importance of doing this. What gets measured gets done, according to the old adage, but it really becomes a point of pride and a community gathering point on the website for people to come through and look at our sustainability dashboard metrics. I'll just show you a few of these now. We have nice icons for each one, which is a page from the same playbook as EcoAmerica. Visuals are really great. So here's our greenhouse gas reduction. We're tracking the reduction of greenhouse gases on campus. We have a scope one that's greenhouse gas production directly on campus, say from burning gas for heat. Scope two is the embedded greenhouse gas emissions from energy that's generated off-site that we bring onto campus, very low since in our part of the country everything is hydro. And scope three is indirect generation of greenhouse gases, such as by faculty who travel to meetings to give talks like this. So we track greenhouse gases. I'm not going to let you look at these, but these will be available if you want to grab the slides. We track trends in commuting. We're doing very well at shifting from single occupancy vehicles to transit, walking, and biking. We track our electricity usage. We track our water usage. It's nicely coming down. We track the proportion of our buildings that are LEED certified, energy efficient buildings. We track the reduction in materials use and where we're sourcing our food and in the amount of trash and waste that we produce. So these are examples of the kinds of metrics that a university can use in its operations. And the last thing I'll say is, what about the health sciences piece? Our university is about a $7 billion a year university, of which well over $4 billion, closer to $5 billion, is our medical center and the health sciences part of the university. But if you came to a meeting of our Environmental Sustainability Committee, you would see among the 30 or so people who come regularly, only about two people from the health sciences. So this is not atypical. It's not that our health science institutions, our hospitals and clinics, aren't doing good work. A lot of them are doing very good work pursuant to practice green health and so on. But that is almost the model that some people suggest, is that a university should be thought of as a small company town with a really big factory in it. So you've got a mayor for the town and you've got a factory manager for the factory, and guess who really has the swing? So you've got a university president, but then you've got the person who runs the health sciences side of the campus. For large health science universities, it's not a bad analogy, and sometimes the health sciences go their own way and don't get fully integrated. That certainly is true on the curriculum side, where a lot of the mojo for curriculum content on climate is not on the health sciences side of campus, but on the other parts of the campus. So achieving that integration, bringing the health science students into this discourse more effectively than we've done, remains a goal that we still have yet to achieve fully. Lastly, jobs for graduates. I don't have much to say about that, unfortunately, because we have not aggressively sought to identify and push career pathways for students who want to go into climate-related work, either directly in relevant policy work, say for utilities or for environmental groups, or in other sectors where they can apply their climate knowledge. And that's true in the health sector as well as in other sectors as well. So, to summarize, we have a lot of reasons for promoting climate and health awareness and action in universities. There are good models available. I offer University of Washington as one, but it's only one of many. And a challenge that we may face, and this is of special relevance to those in this room, is that fully integrating the health sciences into this work, even at a very progressive university, may be a little tough because of the different institutional barriers and paradigms that are used. Thank you.